Hello, my name is Joaquin Cepeda, and I'm here today to present our paper titled Image Compression Using the Iteration-Tuned and Aligned Dictionaries. My co-authors are Christine Guillemot and Eva Kijak, my PhD supervisors. Yeah, so I've divided my talk today into three parts. So the first part, to do a brief review of sparse representations and motivate how they can be used for image compression. And there's some design issues that come up in this scenario, and I address them in the second part, where we present our collaborations. Our contributions. And then I present our results in the third part. So sparse representations. We're given a signal vector Y, and we're also given a dictionary matrix D, which is overcomplete, meaning that it has more columns than it has rows, or than there are signal dimensions. And then we also have so this is a signal vector Y, that's the dictionary matrix D, and this vector X is a sparse representation vector. And what it does is it selects a few columns from the dictionary matrix D, and it weights them to construct an approximation of the signal vector Y, and it's an approximation, so there's going to be an error vector R. So the aim is to use as few columns as possible from this dictionary matrix and obtain nonetheless a good approximation of Y. So the way that one can construct this vector X, well, there's quite a few ways. The way we use in our work is called the matching pursuit algorithm, and it works like so. We initialize a residual vector to Y, and then in the first step of the iteration, we choose a column from the dictionary, the one that's most correlated to the residual vector. Then we set the coefficient to the projection of the residual to that column, and then we check a condition. If we have enough atoms, then we exit. Otherwise, we remove the contribution of the new atom to the existing residual, and then loop back, choose another atom, another coefficient, and so on. So this is the matching pursuit algorithm that we used in our work. And then once we have the vector X, how do we use it in image compression? So there are ways in which these are done in the literature, and this is the way we do it, which is more or less standard. We just take blocks from the image, and then we use one block to be the signal vector Y, and this is the approximation, the sparse approximation D times X. So this is sparse vector X, which is a compact representation of the signal vector Y. So this is the approach we use, but then there are a few design issues that come up here. The first one is, which dictionary D do we use? And then there's our solution here is to use ITAD, which is a new learned structured dictionary. So ITAD is the iteration tuned and aligned dictionary. So that's the first design issue. The second design issue is, how do we choose the sparsity of the blocks throughout the image? So how do we choose how many atoms we use to represent each one of these blocks? And then we're going to present a new approach, which is a global rate distortion-based criteria to distribute atoms across the image. And then a third design issue is, once we have this vector X for each block, then how do we construct a bitstream from that? And then we're just going to use standard approaches to do that based on uniform quantization of the coefficients and Hoffman encoding and a fixed length code for the atom indices. So then the next part of my presentation is going to address these two design issues here, the dictionary choice and the atom distribution across the image. So let's begin with dictionary choice. So just to motivate the dictionary structure that we propose, I've redrawn here the sparse approximation equation, and this is the dictionary D, which is overcomplete, meaning that it's a fat matrix. It has more columns than there are signal dimensions. So then overcompleteness is interesting because that's what originates the sparsity of the vector X, and that's what we want, right? We want a sparse vector X. And then, nonetheless, the more overcomplete D is, then the more computationally expensive it is to find the best few atoms that represent the signal vector Y well. So that's the second issue here. And then a third point is, well, the more atoms we have, then the more expensive it is in terms of coding rate to transmit the atom indices, so the identifiers of the atoms used in the approximation. So overcompleteness produces sparsity, but it also increases the complexity of the decoding scheme and the coding rate. So what we're going to do is we're going to structure the dictionary matrix D, meaning that we're going to constrain the way in which groups of atoms can be selected. So this is the motivation behind the iteration-tuned and aligned dictionary, and these constraints are going to allow us to enjoy overcompleteness and the sparsity that it produces Nonetheless, with a constraint or with a limited penalty in terms of complexity and coding rate. So let me just begin by saying what iteration tuned here means, right? So to illustrate that, I've just redrawn the matching pursuit, a block diagram from a few slides back, and this is a dictionary matrix D, which is constant throughout all iterations for the standard case. Now, in our case, in the iteration tuned case, what we do is we make this matrix D a function of the iteration index, like so. Now, if both, so that's why we call it iteration tuned, because it changes with the iteration index. Now, if both D and all the matrices DI have the same number of atoms N, then, well, the ITD scheme, the iteration tuned scheme, is more overcomplete, right? Because we have a lot more atoms DI to choose from. Yet at the same time, the complexity incurred in selecting an atom in this block is the same because we have as many columns when we use D or DI here. So we have comparable complexity under matching pursuit and also comparable coding rate if we use a fixed length code to encode the atom indices. The coding rate is also going to be log 2 of N. So this structuring approach allows us to enjoy overcompleteness with controlled complexity and coding rate. So I've just redrawn here the matrices DI as a layered structure. So this is the iteration tuned structure, right? So the ith layer here is the matrix DI. And then we're going to train this structure. And the training scheme is very simple. We use a top-down approach. So we assume we have a large set of training vectors Y, and we use all those training vectors to train the first layer, D1. And then once we've trained D1, we fix it and we compute the residues of the output of the first layer. So we have the residues for the entire training set that we use to train the second layer, and so on, down to the last layer in the structure. Okay, so this is, now I've taken the ith layer of the ITD structure in the last slide. So that's that here. There's the input residue and the output residue. And now I'm going to explore geometrically what happens when I use one of two atoms in this layer. So here are the input residues, and this input residues use this green atom here. And then this subspace denoted by this green ellipse here is the output residual space of this green atom. So as you can see, there is a reduction of dimensionality between the input residues Ri minus 1 and the output residues Ri. The output residual space is of one less dimensionality than the input residual space. And likewise for the other atom here, the red one, the red atom reduces dimensionality by one for its input residues. The problem is that the union of these two residual subspaces nonetheless spans the entire original signal space. So this is unfortunate because this means that the dictionary DI plus 1 from the next layer is going to again have to address the entire signal space. So this is what motivates the alignment operation that we propose, which works like so. So now each atom has an alignment matrix, and this alignment matrix takes, for example, the green atom and aligns it with the vertical axis in this toy 3D example, right? And it takes the output residual space of this atom and it aligns it with the horizontal plane. And it does the same thing with the red atom and its output residual space. The output residual space is again going to fall on the horizontal plane. So now the two residual subspaces coincide and they're aligned on the horizontal plane, meaning that the output residual space using this rotation scheme again enjoys a reduced dimensionality. Now, we have a lot of liberty in choosing this rotation matrices that align atoms with vertical axis and output subspaces with the horizontal plane. So we further choose our rotation matrices or our alignment matrices so that they also force the output residual subspaces to have principal components that are also aligned in this horizontal plane. So the first principal component of the red subspace is going to fall along this axis, and likewise the first principal component of this green subspace is going to fall along this axis, and so on for the other principal components. Okay, so now I'm just going to redraw our previous diagram using this modification, this alignment matrix modifications, and that's what I have here. So this is my iteration tuned and aligned dictionary, and as you can see, now I have one alignment matrix per atom, and because of the alignment operation, then the atoms of the matrix from the ith layer, so this atoms from this matrix here, exist in a space of reduced dimensionality, dimensionality d minus I plus 1, where I is the layer index. So this is our solution to the first design issue, which was which dictionary to use. This is the dictionary we're going to use because it enjoys overcompleteness with reduced complexity and a controlled coding rate. Okay. Now, the second design issue was the atom distribution across the image. So here we also have a contribution in this paper. First of all, the standard approach used to specify the number of atoms. So the number of atoms here is L, and this is the sparse approximation of the input signal vector Y, and the standard approach is just to apply an error threshold to this approximation error. So we choose the smallest number of atoms that satisfy some maximum error. And that's the standard approach. The problem is now we have B blocks in the image, and we want to choose the sparsity Ln of each one of these blocks, Yn. So we write a global optimal sparsity selection approach like so. So we want to choose the sparsities of all the blocks so that the cumulative block representation error is minimized, subject to a constraint on the cumulative rate of all the blocks. Okay, now this is not very easy to solve, so we propose an approximate scheme which works like so. We first initialize all sparsities to zero, so we set all Ln to zero, and then we choose the block in the second step that offers the biggest promise in terms of distortion reduction per bit. So this is this here is the distortion when we're using the current sparsity Ln, and this is the potential distortion if we add one more atom to our approximation Yn tilde. So this is the gain, or the reduction rather, in distortion. And then this is the coding penalty incurred by adding this one atom here. So this is the distortion per bit, or the gain in distortion, or reduction in distortion per bit. And this is the block that offers the biggest promise in that in those terms. So we just add one more atom to this chosen block, updated sparsity, and then repeat the scheme from the second step, choosing a new block, adding a new atom to the chosen block, and so on, until the bit budget for the image is exhausted. So that was the second design issue, and now I have some results to present. First of all, the dataset that we're using is as follows. We use the FERRET dataset, which is a dataset of non-homogeneous phase images, so the lighting conditions and the pose is not controlled. So we take a training set of about 450 images, and then training images, and then a test set of 100 images. So these are disjoint images, right? So we use this training set to train our ITAD structure, the iteration tuned aligned dictionary structure, and then we test using this test images here. Okay, so these are just examples of the FERRET dataset. Okay. So here are rate distortion results. I have, first of all these curves are averaged over all 100 test images. So this is JPEG 2000 in black here, the solid black line. This is JPEG in dashed. And then I have three curves for ITAD. This red curve is for blocks of size 8 times 8, the green one for blocks of size 12 times 12, and this one for blocks of size 16 times 16. So as you can see, ITAD offers quite a gain in PSNR at low rates. This is just even greater than 4 dBs. And then at the highest rates, this is still a gain of 0.9 dBs. So let me just point out that the coding scheme we use to encode the sparse vector X is very simple. So this gains in rate distortion are really the merits of the ITAD transform that we use, and also of the proposed atom allocation scheme. Okay, so now I also have some qualitative results. So I have two images here that I encode using JPEG 2000, JPEG, and ITAD. And as you can see, the qualitative results using ITAD are better than both JPEG and JPEG 2000. Okay, so now some concluding remarks. I started by summarizing or reviewing what sparse representations are and how we can use them in image compression. And then in doing so, we ran into three design issues. The first one was, what transformation do we apply to the signal, to the image blocks Y, or what dictionary we use? And there we proposed using a new dictionary structure, the ITAT structure. And then there was a question of how do we allocate atoms across the image? And there we proposed a new global rate distortion-based approach. And then in terms of encoding this vector X, we just used very standard approaches, so there was nothing new there. Yet nonetheless, the results were good, outperforming even JPEG 2000. Yes, this was only for the class of facial images. Thank you very much for your attention. If you have any questions, then I'll be glad to answer them.
We have time for one quick question.
Right here.
How do you compute the rate exactly in your scheme?
I'm sorry?
How do you compute the bit rate?
Okay. So there's a few things that come into play here. So the vector X, we have to specify it in terms of atom indices and quantized coefficients. So for the atom indices, we use the fixed length code. So it's just going to be a rate of log 2 of the number of atoms. And then for the coefficients, we quantize them using a uniform quantizer, and then we use a Huffman code for that.
You didn't expand any special property of decaying of the coefficients, because when you use the MP, most likely the absolute value of the coefficients decays exponentially.
No, we don't use anything fancy. Okay. But yes, that's something that could be exploited. You're right.
Okay. Thanks.
One more question right here.
How do you include the cost of
recording?
I'm sorry.
It's a recorded session, so we need the microphone.
Okay.
Do you include the cost of encoding a dictionary in the rate?
No, we make the assumption that the dictionary is available at the decoder and the encoder.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's thank our speaker.